What's up, everybody? This is another episode of For What It's Worth. I'm your host, Wes Hoffman. Thank you so much for tuning in. Very much appreciate it. I'm just going to say that every time. Those are going to be my words of gratitude to you. So this episode is with Josh Hagquist from The Beautiful Mistake. This is a really cool episode for me. I still am a big fan of this band, The Beautiful Mistake. When they started putting out music in the early 2000s, and Josh talks about it, it was right around the time that this kind of like melodic, hardcore, emo, screamo was really starting to take hold. And The Beautiful Mistake was really right in the mix of all of that. So their first EP and their first full-length album, Light a Match for I Deserve to Burn, were really influential on me at the time. I listened to that album so much. Super big fan of them. So this was cool to talk to Josh and kind of talk about their comeuppance and their resurgence as they're back playing music now. They put out an EP in 2020, and to really hear his story about where things kind of fell off and where they picked them back up. So thank you so much, Josh, for being on this podcast and sharing your story and your musical journey with us. So really appreciate it. We just got back, my band, Wes Hoffman and Friends, we just got back from some shows on the East Coast. We played Philadelphia and New York City. And let me tell you, just our Philadelphia fam, we appreciate you guys so much. Every time that we've played Philly, and I think this has a big thing to do with Jumpstart Records being based out of Philly, is that every time we've played there, we've always had a good showing. We've always had a great turnout. We've always made a lot of friends, new friends there. And this is our third time playing in Philly. And we had a bunch of people that came back to see us and a bunch of friends that came out. So the room was packed all night. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Eric Victor and Ortliebs, as well as our friends Meredith Rebar and Kevin James Holland and Katie Holland as well. So thank you guys so much. We appreciate it. And then in New York City, we played Music Fest here. It's going to be their last festival. Big shout out to Micah and James for putting that on. That was an absolute blast as well. We got to see a lot of people that saw us there last year too. So that was really, really cool. Great trip. We love the East Coast. We love the East Coast. So hope you guys enjoy this episode with Josh Hagquist from The Beautiful Mistake, and thanks for tuning in. So real quick, I have Josh Hagquist here from The Beautiful Mistake and several other projects as well, correct?
Yeah, I guess so. I do my own stuff, and I play guitar in a band called The Stranger Kings that we play every once in a while.
Okay. Yeah.
Low time commitment.
So we were just talking. First of all, I'm a huge fan of Beautiful Mistake. I've seen you guys at least twice that I remember. Once in Texas, in Dallas, at this place called The Door. I don't know if you remember that place. And then once at the Creepy Crawl as well.
St. Louis.
I think my band may have actually played that show too. I don't know. It's been a long time ago. Yeah, I'm based out of St. Louis, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What show did you see at The Door? Was it brand new?
Oh, I know Count the Stars or it was either Count the Stars or North Star or something was on.
North Star.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been North Star, Glass Eater, and Us.
That was it.
Yeah. The reason I asked is we played The Door. It was 2003 summer in Dallas, so it's humid and like 100 degrees, and it was brand new Senses Fail, Monin, and Us.
Wow.
And they oversold the venue, and it was right when Deja and Tendu was the be all end all. And the fire marshal showed up.
Wow.
Every time kids would leave, they wouldn't let them back in because it was way over capacity. And so we were out on the road there, the street where our van and trailer were parked, and riot police show up.
Oh my God.
With paintball guns, like the non-lethal.
Like the rubber bullet, yeah.
And they're screaming at us, and I'm just standing on the back of our trailer. And they're like, get out of the street. It was insane. Like, kids were freaking out. Parents were freaking out because they couldn't get to their kids because the street was closed because the riot police showed up. I'm like, Dallas, man, what a mess.
That is a wild story, man. Yeah. Yeah. That definitely wasn't the show I was at.
But Creepy Crawl, we had tons of good shows there. We played there with Not Waving But Drowning.
Yeah.
Yeah, we always loved playing there. It was so cool. The sound, I forget the dude that did sound there.
Grady?
He was hilarious. He was there forever.
Does Grady ring a bell?
Maybe. He had a checklist at the booth, because bands say the same thing every time they come through, right? And so he had this checklist of like stupid stuff bands say between songs, and he would just mark it off. And we thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, we tried to avoid saying like, what's up, St. Louis?
Right, right. No, that totally sounds like a Grady thing.
Yeah. Good town though. That venue was legit. We loved playing.
Yeah. Yeah. We played there a lot when I was younger. It moved, and then now it's closed down, and there's a, one of the actually several of the guys that used to work at the Creepy Crawl are still doing stuff in St. Louis. One of the guys owns a venue here called Red Flag, and then prior to that it was called Fubar, and it was just down the street. And Grady, he went on to do sound for like The Used and Story of the Year and a bunch of those bands, and
with
them. Yeah. So, but man, I really appreciate you hopping on here. This is awesome. Tell me, okay, I was a big fan of your first EP that had Wide Eyes on it, and then Light a Match was like that was like totally I guess that came out in like 2002 or 3.
Ooh, yeah, 2002. Okay.
So that album was like really, that was for me really when I started getting into heavier music too, and like some of the bands like Norma Jean, Misery Signals, Me Without You, and so it was kind of formative for me. And I'm not the biggest heavy music person now, but the thing I really liked about you guys was you incorporated such a good sense of like melody to it as well. That was like such a nice balance. So, I just wanted to tell you that before we went forward. It was definitely a good influence on me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a blend of mix. You know, it was a mix of all of our influences, and still to this day we kind of operate that way. You know, it's like, We love bands like Shai Hulud and Snapcase, and grew up with those bands, and Mineral and Sunny Day. All you know, our bass player John loves Meshuggah, like that's his favorite band. You know, we all like listen to different things, and it kind of comes together as a mix of kind of those two worlds.
Yeah,
I think, and it's kind of done without really. It's not planned out. Like, we're not sitting around formulating, like, how can we blend these two things, you know, and make money off of it or whatever.
Right, right. Yeah. I love that. I love how it kind of just all melds together in, like, the most perfect way. And so something that a question that I ask a lot on this podcast is, when you guys write, do you have, like, a couple people in the band, because do you have five or six people in the band now?
Five.
Okay, so do you have like a couple people that are like primary songwriters that come to practice, or you know, with a few songs, or is there somebody who like, hey, I have this whole song fleshed out, or do you just get in a room and start playing together and throwing ideas out there and see where it goes as far as writing new songs?
So with our last EP, the You're Not Broken, I Am, we just all got together one weekend. It was after we had gotten back together and played a couple shows, and I think we were all thinking, let's see if we can still write music together. So each of us came with ideas, whether it be a riff or a snippet or something, and then we worked it out as a full band. Like, we had a big It was in our drummer's basement at the time that wasn't finished, and so we were writing on the concrete walls with chalk.
Like, oh wow!
verse, chorus, verse. Play twice, play three times. You know, like we mapped them all out, and it was really collaborative. And you know, we live in different places, so you know, right now, it's people just have ideas and we'll throw it on GarageBand or whatever, but nothing really takes shape until we all get together and everyone has their input. And I like it that way. It slows the process down a bunch, but it feels more collaborative. That's how it was when we started in a garage, you know?
Yeah.
You're just like banging out songs. It definitely feels more organic that way.
For sure.
But that's how we do it. You know, we just come up with ideas and, hey, I have this idea for, you know, I don't know what this part could be. Maybe it could be a bridge. I've got this sick delay part that you have to hear. Everyone's going to love it. And they're like, no, let's go on to the next idea. I'm like, okay, but yeah, that's awesome. We'll try out something else. So.
Yeah. I think that's really cool because you might have, you know, you have somebody in the band where like your bass player that his favorite band is Meshuggah, which is like, you know, something that if I was in a band with him, I don't really listen to them. So they might have, say, hey, after let's go to this, like, you know, after that part, let's go to this super heavier riff. And, you know, if it all works together, that's something that, you know, that somebody else in the band might not ever think of, but it works, you know?
Yeah. And I think it kind of gets put through the beautiful mistake filter, you know, like John, our bass player, had the idea and came up with a lot of East of Eden off of our last EP. And that's probably the heaviest song we've ever put out. And it was kind of this heavy, dark riff. And it kind of went through the filter of the rest of the band, but it's still really heavy. And I think he was able to kind of get his personality and his feel out in that, you know, and be really happy with it. You know, it's hard balancing five people wanting to feel fulfilled musically, you know? And so it's a matter of like kind of figuring it out, compromising, maybe tweaking something a little bit and making it work. So we're all happy with it.
Yeah. That's awesome. I like that. My band is completely different. I write all the songs and everything. So I'm really interested to hear how other people do it. And I think that's a really cool that like, you know, everybody's at the end of the day, everybody's like feels fulfilled musically in some way. And you know, there, it that definitely shines through in your music, I think.
Awesome.
So
yeah, it's a group effort.
Yeah. I love it. So you guys were, you know, I feel like a beautiful mistake. I was my freshman year of college when I first heard about you guys, and we were following, I was a Tooth and Nail kid. And, so I like listened to all those bands. And then the Militia group started putting out like Rufio and Lindsay Diaries, which Scott Windsor is from here in St. Louis. You know, and so we started following all of their bands too. And we were like, oh, this is another really cool label that, you know, we like most of the music off of. And that was how we found out about you guys, me and my friends at the time. So, and then, you know, and you guys were, like you said, you know, playing with like Census Fail, Brand New, like really start to like gain some traction. And then I, you know, you guys, from what I could tell, like just came back a few years ago and started putting out music again. You mentioned just playing in Philly, a couple weeks ago. Like what really re-sparked your passion to do Beautiful Mistake stuff again?
So I think it's a couple things. When we were doing Beautiful Mistake, there were kind of two big iterations of it. There was me with the original dudes and then they quit. And I kept going with new people. A couple of them were great. One of them was not. I mean, it was kind of a train wreck. I made it work, but it was very stressful.
Sure.
But we were all underdeveloped emotionally. We were angry for one reason or another at each other. Probably justified in many instances and probably overblown in others, because we just weren't fully formed adults that could handle good communication. And so you know, we stopped in 2006, the band, and had limited contact with each other. You know, it was hit or miss. But I think, you know, as we got closer to 2018, I had just come out of a divorce, and I wanted to make right with people that I had wronged in the past. It was part of, it wasn't like a 12-step program or anything. It was just, I needed to like get my life together. I've burned so many bridges. Now's the time. And so we all started talking, you know, individually, together, and made things right with each other. And so once we did that, it was like, hey, we got asked to do a show. Do you guys want to do it? And everyone said yes. And so they flew out to San Diego and we rehearsed and played two shows, and it went really well. It was really peaceful and had a blast. And from there, it's just been a slow kind of burn ever since. And been a lot of fun. Like, that's kind of been our motto. Like, if it isn't a hell yes, then it's an absolute no.
Yeah.
For anything that we do. And it's been rad because we're all on the same page with, do you want to play shows? Do you want to do Furnace Fest? Hell yes, we want to do Furnace Fest. You know, and it's a blast. There's no expectations.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I love these songs. I love them for different reasons now than I did when I was 27 or 25. But now it's just fun. I get to like step away from my job for a weekend, go to the East Coast, play a couple shows with my best friends. Rad. If people love it, rad. That's awesome. If they don't, I still got to leave work,
right,
go to the East Coast and play loud music with my best friends. You know? So it's fun, and it's been a really cool journey to kind of have that, you know. Did that answer your question?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. No, I mean, I honestly have a similar path. I was going through, it happened for me a couple of years after in 2020, like I had a business and, I was closing that down and I was going through divorce as well. And that was really when I started picking up the guitar again. And, you know, I played a lot when I was younger, but I was like, man, I really miss this. I really enjoy this. And it also was therapeutic for what I was going through at the time to, you know, to play music. And and it's just, you know, it's different now. Of course, you know, I like to see the project. I like to see more people listening and, you know, gaining traction and stuff like that. But it also is like, hey, I'm just thankful to do this. And I'm 42. So like, I'm thankful to be able to get out here and do this. And, you know, I never thought at one point, I thought I wouldn't play music again or definitely wouldn't tour, you know?
Yeah.
So, are you starting, you kind of mentioned that when you guys played Philly, that people are coming out of the woodwork. Are you finding that at these shows, people are saying, oh man, I'm so glad that you guys are playing again and that you're out and doing the thing?
Yeah, the response has been rad. You know, we played a couple shows in Southern California last year before Furnace Fest, and it was great to see like old friends, but then get messages from people. You know, like we were around before social media really was a thing, outside of MySpace, which makes me sound really old, by the way. But yeah, it's been great to meet people, or they message us and they're like, oh my gosh, I listened to you when I was in high school. I can't believe you're back. I'm coming to the Philly show. Like, you were my soundtrack to, you know, 10th grade or whatever. Like, that's really cool. You know, we're not paying for ads. We're not, you know, paying for Spotify playlists or anything. Like, we're just kind of doing it on our own. And it's been really cool to see that kind of, you know, happen, where more people are like, oh my gosh, like you're back. And we're like, yeah, we released a record in 2020. Granted, there was a worldwide pandemic. Nobody could go outside or do anything, but we released an EP of new music then. You may have missed it. And it's been rad. I mean, I'm very grateful. Like, just what you said, you know, like I never thought I'd be able to do this again. And I'm incredibly grateful, incredibly humbled by people coming out and wanting to hear us play songs, you know. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I'll play it till I'm dead. You know, whether it's on my patio or it's in Philly or in San Diego at a bar or a club or something, yeah. I'll play till I'm dead. I have no reservations about that. Because it's a blast.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So much fun. So much fun.
Yeah.
So when you guys first started and you know, you were doing all these tours and everything, like when you first started the band, did you expect for it to kind of happen the way it did, where you're going on these bigger package tours and stuff like that? Like, you know, or did that all just kind of happen?
You know, we didn't have that expectation. I think when we started, we wanted to get signed or put out records and tour. I don't think we really had an idea as to how that would manifest itself. I think it was interesting because we were in Southern California and the same type of music that we were making was happening on the East Coast as well.
Yeah.
And happening in the Midwest. And so it was all of us that grew up on Get Up Kids, Sunny Day Real Estate, Drowning Man, Snapcase. It's all of us who grew up on all those bands, now starting bands. And so we were, the style of music that we were making happened to be what blew up.
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, it wasn't formulaic in any way, shape, or form. It was, oh my gosh, there's a band on the East Coast called Thursday. Their new record's awesome. Oh yeah, we're kind of doing that too, you know? It wasn't, oh, we heard Thursday and want to start a band.
Sure, sure.
And so we saw the success that we did because I think we worked really hard. We were grinding it out before we were on package tours. But I also think it was the right time. Mm-hmm. It just happened to be where all these labels had bands that were somewhat similar under the same kind of emo, post-hardcore umbrella, even punk umbrella.
Yeah.
And we were there to be a part of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you guys, did you kind of like come up in, so are you based in San Diego?
I mean, we were from Riverside, which is just like greater LA.
Okay.
Orange County.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So, we just played there too. We played this place called the Wayfarer.
In Costa Mesa.
Costa Mesa. Yeah. And then we played, in San Diego, we played Soda Bar. Yeah. Which I love that place. So
yeah, I saw Madball there a few years ago.
Oh wow. That would be insane at Soda Bar. Wait, don't they have, I think they have another venue next to it called Brick Wall or something like that. Okay.
No, I saw them at the Soda Bar on that little stage.
That would be
crazy.
I'm surprised the roof is still on that place.
It was awesome.
After a show like that.
Yeah.
Did you guys like come up in a local scene somewhere where like people were kind of, you know, talking about you or you had kind of like a community of people around you, or was it more of like, hey, we're just going to go out and tour. Like people here don't really understand what we're doing. And, you know, I'm really interested in kind of like the beginnings of that.
Yeah. So we, you know, the Southern California scene was starting to thrive when we started, you know, and so you had hardcore bands like Atreyu and 18 Visions and Adamantium bleeding through. Throwdown. They were all playing. You had pop punk bands like Rufio and, you know, Homegrown.
Yeah.
A lot of bands like that. You had Us. You had Noise Ratchet, Counterfeit.
Oh, I love Noise Ratchet.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Noise Ratchet and Counterfeit, awesome. And we played our first show with Noise Ratchet.
Oh, that's awesome.
But there were a lot of these little like scenes, and we would play with anybody. So one weekend we'd play with Noise Ratchet, and the next weekend we'd be playing with pop punk bands. And the next weekend we'd be playing with Falling Cycle Not Waving But Drowning, who would be on tour, and like a bunch of like metalcore bands. So we kind of bounced around and found acceptance in all of those groups. And so, yeah, we played all over Southern California with all different types of bands in this burgeoning scene.
Yeah, that's super cool. You mentioned that, like, you know, like Thursday and some of these bands on the East Coast were doing a similar thing as to you guys. Did you find like that there were certain parts of when you toured, like there were certain areas and regions of the country that people were into that style more than others?
Yeah, I mean, when we would play Jersey, you know, we just played shows with Tokyo Rose, our good friends.
Yeah.
And they're back now, which is great. But they booked our first shows in New Jersey for us. And, you know, this was, I think the first show we played in New Jersey was a 9/11 benefit. It was in November of 2001. It was us, Tokyo Rose, early November. I think November was like 15 at the time. I mean, they were babies. Folly played. And then we played this punk rock frat house in New Brunswick, near Rutgers. And it was legendary. I mean, everybody played there. And I think we played there with Tokyo Rose and Counterfeit from San Diego.
That's awesome.
And, you know, the reception on the East Coast was really positive. You know, we would play other places and maybe it was not as positive, you know. But I think that type of music was starting to take hold everywhere. So,
sure,
you know, we would find people in each place that were into it and, you know, connect with them.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm just curious to see how, you know, if, you know, there's always like, especially where you guys, you know, from the West Coast, like, and me being from the Midwest, like, you know, sometimes it takes now hardcore is big everywhere. It feels like, bands like Turnstile and Knock Loose have kind of like broken those, you know. But yeah, I'm just interested to see, because I feel like even with my band, we get a better reception at some places just more than others. You know what I mean? And I don't know why. I mean, we're just more of like a old school pop punk band, you know, kind of like more influenced by like Face to Face and the Get Up Kids and all that. You know, but I'm just curious. So, okay,
you guys are great though, by the way.
Oh, thank you, man. That means a lot.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Like I grew up listening to Face to Face and, you know, kind of the West Coast Epitaph, Fat Records stuff. And, you know, yeah, you guys are fantastic.
Thanks, man. I always had such a fascination with the West Coast, just being from the Midwest. It was always like this dream to go out there and, you know, hey, I'm going to go out to California and we're going to make it big, you know? But we finally did a tour. It's been a couple months now. We did a tour and hit like I was saying, we hit a bunch of places in the West Coast and did one show in Arizona. And it was really cool. It was really a lot of fun. And, it rained the whole time we were out there, but
I think pop punk, and I don't use that as like a slur or anything. I think it's making a resurgence. Cause I was, do you remember Forever Came Calling?
Oh yeah. I love those guys.
Yeah. So that dude lives like down the road. I live out in the high desert near Joshua Tree.
Okay.
He lives down the road from me and we connected on Instagram and I'm listening to their stuff that I hadn't listened to in a long time. And I was like, man, this is so good.
It is really good.
And then, you know, I was listening to your last record, the one with the car on the cover or the truck. Yeah. And I was like, man, this is so good. And I, you know, like I said, I've always loved, you know, the West Coast stuff, like Face to Face. Even Ignorance is Bliss, Face to Face.
Me too.
I love that record.
Dude, me too.
So good. But I also love Bouncing Souls and H2O and, you know, Gorilla Biscuits and kind of that East Coast hardcore.
Yeah.
Scene as well. So I think pop punk is coming back. I think it's good because they're good songs. You know? It's fun.
Yeah,
it's fun
it
music.
Is. It is. It is. I like the idea of, you know, when I was younger, I was just writing songs about like someday I'll get out of this town or like, you know, I'm writing songs about like some breakup that I had. And now, you know, I'm trying to write more adult, like you know, things that I'm going through now as a 42-year-old, as opposed to, you know, and it's just a little bit more serious, I guess, you know. It still has that like pop punk vibe, but like trying to incorporate things that people my age will understand, you know, like can relate to.
Yeah.
Mental health struggles, you know, different things like that. Okay, I wanted to ask you, so you said that you live in the high desert, and I've seen on your Instagram you do like a lot of hiking and everything.
Yeah.
So my girlfriend and I are getting ready to go to Santa Fe for like it's our 5-year anniversary, and we're gonna go be out there for like 5 days. Do you have any hike? Have you ever been out there for hiking, and have any recommendations? Or
I haven't, but I have some books on. Like I get all these random books. Like my dad gets them for me for Christmas, and it's like 100 best hikes in Arizona, 200 best hikes in Albuquerque or in New Mexico. So I'll come up with some and send you some recommendations.
Okay.
It depends on if you want leisurely or like soul crushing.
Oh,
just give me a rating on what you would like.
Cause yeah,
most of my friends kind of make fun of me for the like suffer fest that I hike. And so I have to tame it a little bit when I give wrecked.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely, my girlfriend is probably more on the like soul crushing side of like, she kind of likes some of the technical hikes sometimes, but I'm definitely more on the, like, you know, it's cool if it's a long hike. You know, as long as it's just not too crazy steep and, you know, I want to enjoy it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll send you some recommendations.
Okay, dude, that'd be awesome. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
What's the craziest hike that you've ever done?
I mean, crazy's relative. So, you know, like there's people out there that could like run up Everest and without oxygen in shorts. Not really, but you know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure.
Like, there's always somebody that, like, when we were out in Philly, we were talking about, there's this thing called FKT, and it's fastest known time.
Okay.
And it's people, you know, tracking themselves and timing themselves on hikes. It could be a 1-mile hike down by a lake, or it could be the Pacific Crest Trail, which is like over 2,000 miles.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about it when we were together, and somebody did the Pacific Crest Trail in like 42 days. Wow. It's like they were doing like 80 miles a day.
Wow. That's crazy.
And so, it's, you know, craziest hike. I did Mount Whitney in a day. I day hiked that. I've done the Grand Canyon rim to rim.
Oh,
in a day. Like
awesome.
I just do it in one shot without camping or anything. It's a day. I do it as a day hike. And then probably, there's a trail in Joshua Tree National Park called the California Riding and Hiking Trail. It's like 38 miles, and it kind of goes through a large chunk of the park.
Okay.
And I did that as a day hike. It was fun. It was on Black Friday 2 years ago, and I was like, this looks like maybe I'll try it. I'll see if I can do it. And I did it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's more just about being out in nature and the peace. Like, I don't wear headphones. I don't wear earbuds. I don't want music going. I hike mostly by myself because I just like the quiet. Like I was in Death Valley Saturday afternoon and then yesterday, and hiking, and I was up on this ridge headed to this peak, and it was completely silent. Like there was no wind. There was nothing. It was so. It was weird, but really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just out here by myself. Like, I haven't seen a person all day. It's so peaceful to me, and it really helps my it's good for my mental health to just kind of be away from everything and kind of unplug.
Yeah.
No cell service, nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I feel the same way. I'm not as my girlfriend is really the one who's gotten me into hiking. because I grew up on a farm, and we were always out in the woods playing and stuff like that. And I always, like, growing up, I always envied the kids who, like, lived in town or lived in cities, because, like, the nearest neighbor was like a mile away from us when I was a kid. I grew up on a farm. So as I got older, I was like, well, I want to do, you know, we've, like, flip-flopped. I'm like, I want to do, like, city stuff now, because I spent, like, most of my younger life, like, away, you know. But she's really gotten me into it, and she says the same thing when she, you know, in the winter here, you know, you're kind of stuck inside, and after a while, if she hasn't been on a hike or been out in the woods or something, she's like, I just need to go. I need to connect with nature. I need to unplug. And then that, you know, she usually comes back, and she's like, okay, I feel way better. I just needed that, you know?
Yeah. It's, you know, I didn't start, I mean, I would hike, do short hikes and stuff, you know, over the years, nothing crazy. But when COVID hit is when I really started getting into it. Like, I quit smoking. I was like, I don't want to die. I want to be healthier. And so, yeah, I started doing it and just really loved it right away. And
that's awesome.
Kind of started pushing myself, like, maybe I'll try that. Maybe I'll try that. And I always laugh because I'll talk to people about hiking. And again, like, there's millions of people that could outrun and outhike me all day in their sleep, probably. But it's so, I feel so calm when I'm out there.
Yeah.
And I like pushing myself, and I've bailed on a ton of hard hikes. Like, it's not about impressing anybody. It's not about wanting to break a record or thinking that I'm awesome. You know, like, I've bailed on big hikes, and there's no shame. Like, I can come back. That mountain's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That trail's not going anywhere. unless, like, the sea swallows that mountain, probably not going to happen. I'm going to be okay. I can go back another time. There's always another day. And so I kind of look at it that way. Like, I just do it for myself. And, yeah, some of the hikes I do are kind of crazy and maybe mildly dangerous. But it's just, I feel recharged, like you said about your partner. Like, I feel recharged, you know.
Absolutely.
I'm ready to go, and then I'm already thinking about, what do I want to do next? Like, where do I want to go? So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Josh, this has been a great podcast, man. I would love to, I hope we get to meet in person someday. You know,
let's do some shows.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. We would love that.
Awesome.
I've got a few minutes left before Zoom kicks me off, because I haven't upgraded to the, I'm still rolling on the free version. So can you tell us, you know, what shows you guys have coming up in the near future?
Yeah. So we're in July, we're doing, 4 shows we're doing Arizona, Orange County, San Diego, and LA with, Audio Karate.
Oh yeah.
Tokyo Rose and Watashi Wong.
Oh, that'll be an awesome tour.
So it'll be super fun. We're just excited that all those bands are finally playing with, like, a real heavy band like us, you know, to just boost their cred with the tough kids. But yeah, we're doing those shows. And then October 2nd, we're playing in Birmingham as a pre-Furnace Fest show. We're playing with Head Automatica.
Oh, nice.
And this great band from San Diego called Tigers in Cairo.
Okay.
They're fantastic. So, and they're friends of ours. So we've got that coming up, and then we'll see what happens. That's what we have booked right now. And, you know, if something pops up and we can do it, cool. And if we can't, you know, we all are balancing normal life schedules, and there's 5 of us. So we'll see.
Absolutely.
But yeah, just playing shows and having fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I definitely hope I can make it out to one soon. And, yeah, I really appreciate you. I just kind of shot in the dark, wanted to send you a message and see if you'd be down to do this. So I really appreciate you taking the time, man.
Always. I'm always very appreciative, you know, like, I'm not reinventing the wheel. Like, I'm just talking about stuff, you know. But it always helps when the person that's doing the podcast band doesn't suck. I will say that, you know.
Thank you. Like, that means a lot.
We were joking about it. We're like, because I've done this forever, but you know, your friend, you have a friend, or you know somebody, and they're in a band, and you see them play, and the band's not your bag, you know, not your cup of tea, and then they get off stage, and they're like, "What'd you think?" It's like, I always say stuff like, "Ah, it looked like you were having a lot of fun."
Right, right.
Or, "Oh man, it was so loud." Or, "Oh, you had so much energy." So it's nice when you're talking to someone and you're like, "No, their band's like killer. Like, you guys are great."
Thanks, man.
It kind of helps.
That means a lot, man. That really means a lot.
I'm being serious.
Awesome. So. Well, thank you so much. I'll have this up on this Thursday.
Awesome. Yeah, send me a link and I'll post about it. And again, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Great chat.
Absolutely. You bet. Thanks, Josh.
All right. Yeah. Have a good day.
See you, brother.